Listen and stream the only talk radio, Freedom 106.5, for the only talk that matter.
7:30 in Trinidad and Tobago. At this time, we get into, we usually have very interesting discussions about our culture and so on at this time, and we're going to get into another one of those at right now. As we continue our country, our culture, we're going to put down some of those tough topics and pick them back up at 8:20 or so. And this morning we're going to be discussing TNT's music as a viable product internationally outside of Carnival, the second installment of our discussion. We were supposed to have three guests with us, and we do have one of our guests. I think the other one is now logging on. So we do have one of our guests with us at this point in time. That's Mr. Martin Raymond, UTD professor. Good morning to you, and welcome to our program.
Hi, morning. Thanks for having me on.
Nice to have you with us here. While we wait for our other guests to log on, as we usually do, let me allow you the opportunity to familiarize my listeners with you. And give us a bit of history as to how you started in the business, some of the things that you're involved in, and so on. Go right ahead.
Morning, Michael, as well.
Good morning, eventually.
Yeah. And I was very fortunate to get a start in this business. At age 15, I wanted to be a professional musician. And at age 17, right after leaving Fatima College, I kind of fell under the wing of arranger Carl Beaver Henderson and became a musician, a full-time musician in the new ensemble he had started, Old Fireflight. Everyone at EMA at that time said, you know, you need to have something to fall back on. You know, maybe you can't make a living in music or being a musician alone. I decided if I was going to have something to fall back on, it would be in the music industry. So I began learning sound engineering, first being an apprentice at Shark Studios, Hugh Robertson's studio in Carenage, world-class studio, and then later at Semp Studios in Mukurapa Road. And my career continued from there. So aside from being a musician, I got into sound engineering, music production, and then I had gone back to, in the 80s, I went back to London, where I was originally from, actually. I'm a Trini by boat. I was born in London and came here on a boat at a very young age.
Right.
And started a career as a musician, producer, and over time I got involved in education, and I started coming back to Trinidad in the 90s, thanks to building the Caribbean Song Beats and Recording Studios here. And all of this was towards a push of kind of really helping to establish the industry here in Trinidad. And along the way, we also developed one of the first audio training programs out at Caribbean Song Basin, and that actually laid the foundation for what I'm doing now, which is the Digital Media Arts program at University of Trinidad and Tobago.
It's definitely a lot.
That's like about 40 years in about 2 minutes.
Our second guest here this morning is local jazz musician Michael Boothman. Good morning to you, and welcome to our program.
Good morning,
and nice,
and welcome to the Trinidad. Good morning to Trinidad and Tobago as well.
And nice to have you with us here this morning, as I did with Mr. Raymond. Let me give you the opportunity to familiarize the listeners with you. Tell us a bit about yourself, some of the things that you're involved in.
Well, it's a lot encapsulated in a 60-year involvement in music. I started very young. First band I had with Rockefellers that started in during the 60s, early 60s, and we progressed from there. My first recording actually was done in 1967, and I started very young. I don't want to age myself that because I started the band at around age of 14. Playing with the band and leading the band afterwards, and then I did quite a few recordings. Started my first recording was done at Lucky Samaru studio on Dundana Street. We recorded at Strand Cinema. Those were the days when they used to record with two mics, And then we went up to the studio, which is a studio that he was affiliated to RCA back in the day. And then from there, I was introduced by Goldfish, the engineer, German engineer, that worked with Samuru. And I did my first composition, musical composition, after hearing me perform and play in the band. And I wrote my first composition in the early days with Rockefellers. And from there, we released quite a few singles and so on. And from there, I'm going to have to do a big skip, boy, because it's so many years that went behind it. I also got a contract. I was contracted after doing a recording at KH called Saying It With Music and Diego Shuffle. And it caught the ear of one of the America's premier producers, Clarence Avant, who actually discovered my music while he was touring. Contacted me, and I signed up a contract with him with RCA Records back in the early 70s. So I got this major recording contract, and I recorded the Heaven album during that period. Came back home afterwards. I've been circling the Caribbean doing performances during that period as well, and spreading the name and getting myself out there. And right now, I have to skip because I'll take up a whole morning just talking about what my achievements and so on. Right now, I own a studio called Poetry Music. After doing a 12-year stint at the Hyatt Regal Agency as a guitarist, musician, and vendor for entertainment there at the hotel. Here I am.
Okay, definitely some great information. Then we are our third guest joining us here this morning is a music producer, and that's Mark Wright. Good morning to you, and welcome to our program.
Hi, good morning. Good morning, everyone.
Nice to have you with us here this morning.
Hey, Mark.
Hey, morning. How you doing?
Yeah, all right. Long time.
Long time, man. Mm. Long time.
As I
happy
did.
Happy belated birthday, old man.
Yeah, belated boy. Yeah,
is that nice?
Yeah.
Good morning. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. You know, I now joined that ranks of old man, right?
Mark, as we did with the other guests, let me give you the opportunity to tell our listeners a bit about yourself and some of what you're involved in. Go right ahead.
Good morning, everybody. Good morning, Trinidad and Tobago and the world at large. And the panel, y'all, thank you all for having me. I started my career at a young age of 13 or 14, I think, back in the late 80s. I think, as I should say, when you're starting getting paid to do what you love, that's when the career starts. Was in a group with some great friends, Shell Shock, the great producer, Patrick Gordon, Vibe, and a couple other guys, Romel Bass, Garvin Bass. We had a group called M Voice back in the day. And we used to do we were like a tuba band doing a lot of the Miami sound type style music. You know, Noel Sending All My Love and that kind of stuff. Dean Williams was also in the band with us as a guitarist. And that was prior to us disbanding and then forming another group called Blackmail, which then made up the production side of what turned out to be the Kiskadee Caravan. And we went through that phase. Eventually our group got signed to EMI Records in 95 when Robert Amar took us to France to meet them, music conference in France. And we performed out there. We met Christian Cabazar, who was a then record exec who was working at EMI Records, and he wanted to work with us. And Christian, we struck a deal and he signed us to EMI Records. and he went on to being our manager, and we were able to, when we were looking to be released, our album was, our contract, I should say, was bought out by Atlantic Records. So in 1997, we got signed over to Atlantic Records. And that allowed us to work with some of, I would say, America's bigger producers. You know, so we got to work with Ted Riley, Blackstreet, got to share sessions with Tony, share sessions with Sean Puffy Combs and that sort of stuff. And our group, you know, that went for a while. And I started sound engineering around that time, well, just being a knobster, you know, just curious, sitting in sessions with Mice and Carl Beaver Henderson and George Myers, you know, sitting in those sessions, I started picking up a thing or two. And they started realizing that I have a knack for engineering, and they started to show me a thing or two. And George, I would say, was fundamental in me becoming an engineer, because he insisted that I mix a record for him, that I keep telling him that I was no engineer, and he was, nah, you have to be the one, you have to be the one. And that turned out to be his first Road March Carnival comeback again. So I will give my engineering kudos or that push to Iowa George, because he insisted. When I was just having fun and thinking it's something nice to do, he saw that potential and pushed to make sure that I got in, and went on to work with Ecstatic with Marshall for 5 years. I went on to work with Rituals for a number of years, which I did Mongol Patissa's Dreadlocks album, and a lot of stuff with Tree Canal and Kindred and Panberry, and one thing to the next, and here we are. I think, like Mike says, there's just so much things to say and list that it feels almost like it's a story better told by somebody else.
What is clearly evident amongst the three guests that we have here this morning is the wealth of experience and knowledge and practicality, because you've lived a lot of what you're talking about. This is not just going in a classroom and sitting down and theoretically being told about these things. You all have been able to actually see it happen, to make it happen in some instances when it comes to music and some of the careers of the big artists, and being involved in the process of making some of the stars who they are at this point in time. So you've been able to see firsthand some of the challenges that exist. You've been able to see some of the positives that come out of the industry. And we're going to tap into a bit of that as we pick apart the topic. Now, we've been talking about this for some time on this feature that we've been running since January, I think it was. Every Friday, we focus on our culture, our country, and we've decided to hone it down into, because we're speaking about diversification and music being one of the pillars. This country's music is a viable product internationally outside of Carnival. And that's a relevant discussion, because Carnival for us is a season. And here at home in Trinidad, yeah, we put it down. We might have a fete or two in between. The band launches later on in the year. But aside from that, what's the real potential of this thing we call the greatest show on earth, and the music and the talent that goes along with it? Do we have the ability, do we have what it takes to take this to the next level, which probably would be the international stage, and to see some of our artists getting the kind of accolades that we've seen others in the region able to achieve? But we need to take a couple of quick messages before I get that. But that's the question that I'm coming back to ask you. First and foremost, do you all think that this country's music is a product that is viable internationally outside of Carnival?
Talk is streaming at freedom106.5.com.
Welcome back. Just about 12 minutes before the top. Speaking about our culture, our country, TNT's music is a viable product internationally outside of Carnival. So I've posed the question, we have our three guests here this morning. Which of you would like to take a stab at the first? Is our music a viable product internationally outside of Carnival?
Well, if my other guests would just allow me to jump in here ahead of you all,
right.
I would say your two other guests, Mike Boothman and Mark Wright, are living examples of the answer to that is yes. In terms of signing with international labels, getting stuff on the charts, etc., I think the question has to be, how do we make it sustainable? But I remember growing up hearing like Mike Boothman, Digo Shuffle, etc. on the radio, and Heaven and things like that. So one of the things I think we just need to clarify is that when we talk about Trinidad's culture, music is our culture, not a specific style of music. This is the one of the strong points about Trinidad, and it's not well understood in Trinidad, and it's even less well understood outside of Trinidad. Trinidad is one of the most diverse countries in the Caribbean. It's one of the most ethically diverse when it comes to biodiversity as well, but also when it comes to music. We are equally capable in any form of music. Music is can be one of our big exports, and we have to angle it that way. So, and you have the example of, let's say, Mike in the 70s with a sort of jazz influenced R&B charting, then all the way to Black Male in the 90s with a slightly soca influenced hip hop type of thing. And one of the things that struck me as well, one of the things that we are unique in is even when it comes to songwriting, like Mark, I remember one of the things I was there when seeing the excitement around Black Male from people like Teddy Riley, etc. And correct me if I'm wrong, one of the things that interested them was the kind of unique approach to songwriting. Like, you guys had a song about writing a song that had no chorus. So it was like totally sort of left field. And I remember the Americans like, wow, this is like so different what they're doing. So it's a skill that we have had. The other point that is a central theme in both Mike's and Mark's story is, maybe what's lacking at this point is that you need a middleman. You always need a connecting person. And when you had someone like Clarence Avant, there's an excellent documentary on him on Netflix called The Black Godfather. I recommend everybody check that out. To understand, you need figures like that to make those connections. In a similar way, Barker Christian was the same type of figure, who a foreigner who just saw the potential in our music. And one of the things that Christian, God rest his soul, always said, you know, he says, you know, Trinidad, like, you have these different clusters of energies in different parts of the world. And he spoke about, you know, post-World War Europe, in that Rhine Valley, where all of a sudden you had Mercedes-Benz, Ferrari, Audi. You suddenly had this cluster of people who knew how to make cars and dominate in the market. He felt Trinidad was like that when it came to music. He said, you guys just have it in terms of songwriting, performing, any type of music. And his passion was to show the music industry worldwide, including EMI Records, people like that you can make a dollar out of Trinidad. You can make money out of Trinidad. It's about business, but we have a natural resource here that needs to be exploited. But so long and short, the answer is yes. Question is, how do we make it sustainable? Because you have two guests here who've been there, done that, have the chart placings and the gold and platinum records to prove it, and we have quite a few others as well. Yeah. So it's not a question. It can be done. It's just, how do we continue to do it?
Mm. How do we can? If I may, music industry is one of the most unique in the world in terms of you. This is the one industry where there's no standard. I can risky say no standard, but it's all about negotiation. Every single contract is about what you negotiate for, everything you do. So it's no, well, Tom got X and I should get Y because Tom got X. It's about what understanding your value and having somebody in your camp that understands this language and understand how to negotiate for what you think you're worth. So it I always remember the phrase, you know, we make music, but we do business, and music, we in the music business. The word business longer than the word music. So we should learn to do business, you know, and because of that, a lot of people want to think that the music business is a shady thing because they don't understand that it's all about, comes down to your negotiation. So you have to understand business when you get into this. It's not all just fun and games and happy times. You know, you have to do your end. I remember doing the sessions with Teddy Riley and the guys, and I was logging studio hours, because after having conversations with Tony, and they educating us about the business side of music, I was logging studio hours and have the producers sign my diary at the end of the session when we take a break. And so there was a point in time when they say, okay, Marco, your turn. And I had to go to the booth to record a part of the song. And they was like, wait, you know, one of the artists? I thought you was a lawyer for the group. The way you marking studio time. And I was like, yeah, well, we have to pay for this. we have to pay for this. So I have to be able to sit down and say, well, how much is the budget? What do you claim we spend? Because at some point in time, they're going to recoup. So I had that acumen a long time to mind my business, do the business side of things. You know, so, and to answer the question that was posed, yes, we can do it internationally. Yes, it is a viable thing. But I think we have to go back to making product. Your pen must not be biased to where you are. Your pen must tell a story that anybody can relate to any part of the world. Your pen must not be limited to in Arima, and for people who don't know where Arima is and what the experiences of Arima is. It, you know, and limit their imagination. Your pen must make them travel. That's what I think.
Well,
and we must go to making product to sell. Because I don't think we are making product. We are doing songs that put it on the radio so our promoter can hear you to put you in a party. And there's no skip.
No, that point that you're raising there, in all of the discussions that we've had in this series, every single Friday from January to now, everyone that we've spoken to has said the exact same thing. That the songs and their focus, it's myopic. They're studying the stage, they're studying the road, they're studying some fact, and the international community just simply cannot associate with those things. So, and we've spoken last week, we had a panel that included four persons, and among them was Ziggy Ranking. And Ziggy was saying that when he performs internationally, if there are people from the Caribbean or from Trinidad in the crowd and everything else, they understand and they appreciate what's going on. But by and large, the community outside can't associate with the music because of the lyrics, because of what it's focused in. And he's forced many times to sing reggae in order to satisfy the crowd. So it's been highlighted as an issue. We need to take some messages to take us up to the top. When we come back on the other side of eight, I guess the obvious question is, well, how do we achieve that? How do we get contributions and songs and everything else that cater to or can cater to an international demand, to the point where we can see an artist breaking some of these glass ceilings and getting onto that international stage? That response, as I said, gentlemen, hold on to that till just after the 8 o'clock news. I'll be asking that question. We're continuing with our discussions right here on this installment of our weekly feature now. Our country, our culture, TNT's music as a viable product internationally outside of Carnival. Stay with us.
Is streaming at freedom106.5.com.
The final hour of our show here this morning. With us, of course, we have our special guest, Mark Wright, music producer, and also with us here this morning, Martin Mice Raymond, UTT professor, and as well, local jazz musician, Michael Boothman. Before we went to the break, I'd ask the question, because we've been discussing the possibilities, and you all have agreed that, yes, the possibilities exist for us to take this thing known as TNT music across the world and make it viable. But we're having the discussion now on, well, how exactly do we achieve that? What are some of the things we need to do? Yes, go right ahead.
Well, I would like to make this contribution to the first, before we go to this particular topic. One of the recordings I did quite in 1980, with Charmaine Ford, What You Want For Love and Waiting For Your Love. Actually, I had some people out in London helping me do my little marketing and stuff, and found out that this maker, one of the recording pressing companies in London, it was found out that particular album, out of 100, not album, it was a single, an EP. It was rated 23 out of 100 top disco playing recordings that came out in that time. And that is, when it hit 23 out of 100, including people like Earth, Wind & Fire and all the other groups. So it came from Trinidad. They also found out that my presence was more recognized in Europe, Africa, and Japan. And I am here in Trinidad, unaware of it. And it's only because I've had people who, as Marco was saying, that was trying to help me with the business side of it and be able to follow through. And since then, I released an album called Songbook One. And again, the most set of, as a matter of fact, Spotify had the recording at the time doing great numbers. Now, if I stayed here and not have a person who could help market, I'm the creative, but we need to have people in the business. Right now, I have been looking for a local manager. I cannot find one that understands the business. I mean, I have to sort of assist and help a person whoever I'm bringing into the fold to help manage me. And Michael made some very valid points, because during the 70s, when I worked with RCA, that's where I actually learned the business of the music business, because I was hired as a producer apart from being an artist. So having to work with people, some of the best musicians in New York City, and working with Clarence Avant, which is a huge opportunity. I mean, there were days when I walked out of RCA Record just crying, out of just tears running down my eyes, and I don't know why, you know, just couldn't believe. I had to pinch myself all the time and see if I'm real, you know, because these things happen. And it happened for me quite here in Trinidad. I'll give you another example. After coming back to Trinidad, Taj Mahal, Ralph McDonald, we were looking for a bass player to go on a world tour with him. And I was recommended by Ralph, telling him, check out this guy in Trinidad, to be able to do it. And I did a world tour playing at some of the most prestigious jazz festivals in the world, Montreux, North Sea, you name it. We reached as far as quite out in Europe and Scandinavia and places like Helsinki and stuff like that. And again, while out there, I recognize and realize that we don't have people that were marketing people, and we have a good corporate body of people out there that could probably invest. And again, government had given incentives to people who invest in music and stuff like that. There really is a need for that. So, yes, I would say that it's extremely viable. Just from my own personal experience, what we need now is managers, people in the business, people to really put the money behind. Because after doing an album, you need the marketing part of it, and that is where we fall short, because we did the creative part of it, but we don't have, like in Jamaica, for instance. I can remember an experience I had when I played at the United Nations. Our embassy was very shoddy. I mean, we going to do a 12 o'clock performance for promoting our country and music out there, and our not ambassadors, but our people out there. But very shoddy. They were really relaxed. As one of the Jamaican cultural attaché came across to me, and she had to help to make us, do the performance. And afterwards, she said that anytime a Jamaican artist come to America, the embassy invite them in and they provide them with the type of support to be able to get their thing. They're able to meet. They put press conferences together and invite people of the industry so that they'll be able to meet and greet. Mm-hmm. So that at the end of the trip, it doesn't say they went and played in Brooklyn at a party. It is a point of getting there and making business for other better engagements by bringing people to the artists. So we have an embassy out there that really sleeping on the job in terms of the culture. You know, we need to really get ourselves promoted out there.
We can't do it ourselves. This is not the first.
Very valid point, because we have lots of artists that do raise a flag and bring that attention, you know, like the Marlon Asher and the Queen Omega, just to name a couple. We have to have government support in terms of seeing this as a business and an industry that they can invest in and support. Because when I was growing up doing my thing, we had outlets like Piscity Caravan, Party Time, 12 and Under, where you could come and showcase talent of a wide variety and get to see yourself on TV as a youth and that opportunity of grooming. I don't think there's anything like that right now. So they have an outlet. And we were able to benefit from the mentorship of me coming and sit with Matt, with Mice, with Mike, and other musicians that went before us. Because I think right now, we are continuously pressing the reset button and starting over. We are the almost make it country in terms of industry, because we don't fine tune this history that we have and the experience that we have to push the new thing forward. Everybody is in their own world doing their own thing, and then we don't have government support. We don't have local radio playing our music, right, our music to the audience, you know, and giving you that opportunity to polish it and fine-tune it. And then the whole business aspect of it is where we are lacking, because there are lots of Trinidadians out there that in the music industry, internationally, who have individually done things. But in terms of the reach back, or when they try to do business with Trinidad, there's always some obstacle that turns them off, or some experience. Well, because I remember coming back home and saying, hey, fellas, we've been doing this wrong. We've been doing this wrong. This is how it's supposed to be done. And everybody's like, Mark, what are you talking about? But just behave yourself. You feed the cause you make it. Because you get signed, or the thing called you know now. And it's not that. It's like, hey, we have a way to fast track the thing. Let us fast track it. You know, so.
If I can just jump in briefly, because I feel I have to go shortly. So in the area of government, I think the government is very aware of this potential as an industry. It has been targeted as one of the pillars developing the creative sector. So just disclaimer, so I'm on the board of Music TT, which is a subsidiary of Creative TT. And it's one of the initiatives they're trying to do. So one of the things is really putting a focus. So for instance, Music TT and Creative TT falls under the Ministry of Trade. So I think there's a recognition that maybe this needs to be more about trade, about business, as opposed to culture, etc. There are a number of initiatives happening there in terms of creating network opportunities. For instance, with this year, with the Reverb Conference, which is probably second or third year we're running, Music TT is running a Reverb Conference. We've tried to shift the focus more on the business side of things. We're hoping to have sort of guest speakers from other parts of the world, both Africa, South Korea, etc. And the main purpose of this is to explain to investors in Trinidad. There are persons with money, there are businesses with money in Trinidad, but they need to see music as a viable outlet, as a viable source of revenue. Right now, the corporate sector in Trinidad, they see music in some instances more as a kind of handout. Okay, we sponsor a steel band, maybe some T-shirts, etc. But they prefer to invest in real estate or fast food as opposed to seeing as, for instance, what was done in Korea, what's now happening in Nigeria and sub-Saharan Africa's now growth in revenue from recorded music, revenue from streaming, sales, etc., because of investment. So this is what is really needed. And this is where what the Anglo Music Treaty is looking at, to get the business sector involved. The British government did the same thing about 15 years ago. They realized one of their shortfalls in their industry was the industry was being driven by smaller record labels, independent record labels, and those labels did not have access to finance. So if the bigger labels did, but the smaller labels who were really driving the industry didn't have access to finance, they put things in place. And as a result, every British artist you've seen for the last 15 years, Adele, Sam Smith, all of them, beneficiary of that initiative, and it was more geared towards trade, etc. But you quite, I think, but there does need to be a more finance accorded to that, as well as more coordination, as I say, particularly between maybe different ministries, as well as the embassies, etc. But that is starting to kind of come into place, particularly now. I think they've really been able to give support to artists touring, etc. But we do think more investment is needed. But I think the government is very aware of the potential of it in terms of the creative sector is the one area that really needs to be developed. It's just going about it the right way, or maybe at a faster pace. Unfortunately, gentlemen, great to see you guys, but I do have to go. Once again, thanks to radio station Freedom 106 and your listeners. It's a great initiative to get these types of discussions going. And Mark and Michael, see you guys on the charts.
Marker on the point there. He made some very valid, as well as mice, in terms of what we really need. We really need to get people involved, marketing people who probably out of UE and schools or something like that. You know, people who, you know, not a partner who will come and just get a fit for you or a little gig for you. You need people who could do a budgetary plan. It's a projection, set up planning, you know, make connections with, you know, for instance, they have agencies like PPL, all the agencies out there. Because another thing, you get to the music outside of Trinidad, we have to have all the paperwork done properly, all the contracts.
Yeah, follow up.
Good place, because the platforms that would really do work for, you know, in synchronization, all these things, they're not going to touch you unless you are really clean in terms of having all the paperwork done. You know, because the majority of the time we work, it's not just said that you have to pay for everything, but the paperwork means that even though you work on a project, you're entitled to, yeah.
Credit information is
information key. Is important. So, you know, you may sign a contract and not get, you know, not sign a contract for $1,000 or anything. It might be just $1. But once you are part of the various agencies like PPL and PRS and you know, I know we've caught trying, but caught has been trying for a long time, and to me it's failed in terms of where it is and what it is, has been doing for a number of years. Because I recently had to move on to go back to PRS. PRS was I was a original member of PRS before joining the thing, but At the end of the day, you know, for instance, my management was trying to reach CUT to get some information to work with them, and they didn't even get a response. You understand what I'm saying? And that is a business that's supposed to be looking after the creatives, you know, and so there are artists who are not getting their dues because of the fact that there's no follow through. So all of these are areas that is earning for the writers, for the people who put in the music together, the publishers and stuff like that, because they're a big business.
Yeah, it's a multi-billion dollar business, and we have to stop looking at artists as this is a big artist and this is a small artist, so I'm not going to pay him any mind. Every artist has the potential to be the big artist. It's just one song away. So it's having the right attitude and having the right people behind them. So like I say, the cuts and all these things are very important. Like Martin was saying, music TT initiative, that is very important. So
very important.
The radio station. So I would like to thank the radio Freedom 106 for actually having a program and a forum like this where we could share this knowledge and experience, because it is missing in our society. We have far more impact than we are aware of. Someone recently asked me, you know, the Jamaican concert from Redemption that just happened, look how many people turned out for that. How come our local music don't fill the savannah like that? And I said, well, we're singing the wrong thing. Most of the artists that came for Redemption singing about love. Most of the artists nowadays singing about violence.
And
a certain amount of people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Definitely.
You know, you have to have your pen. This is the power of your pen.
Oh.
Universal.
Yeah.
Somebody will have a Tabanka, or they're now falling in love.
As recent as last night, I had a radio personality in the studio with me and stuff like that. And he was at first he put on TikTok, and a Jamaican artist or somebody. At first I thought it was somebody playing the fool, actually, you know. I thought it was something for a laugh, because I know TikTok will have these funny things. And he turned to me and said, well, this thing big, you know. I said, big in what sense? Is it comedy or what, you know, what it is? Because it was nonsensical,
right?
The cashier attention. So I said, you listen to this, you follow this. I said, yeah. He said, well, this is all the people. I said, what people? People you talking about is just one little
small circle.
So I brought him inside the studio, because they always feel that old school and new school. There's no school, one school. Trust me, music. And I brought him inside the studio, and I put on Justin Schultz, Lee Schultz, the little teenager who masterfully played the piano, guitar, and thing. And I played some other music. This guy was totally blown. I say, you know, you thought I was going to bring you to listen to old school music. I say, no, the music that out there, the young people out there are educating themselves, not to come out and sing dancehall with nonsense lyrics and about guns. The Trinidad music here was done, majority of them was done by my studio with one of the young producers. And I tried to mentor them, but I did my best in terms of trying to explain to them. I say, you know, you're coming to the studio, you're not really paying, I'm doing a pro bono for you, and yet still I can't see any benefits on it, because at the end of the day, you're singing about smut that is too hard for the ears to listen to. I mean, I don't want to sound like a prude, but they're going over the line. Mm-hmm. And the lyric content is either about guns, and, you know, majority of them got killed.
Yeah.
Majority of them who sat down in my studio, I was surprised, because I was pointing out to them, you know, that where we're going at, you know, Big Bamboo and Bamboo Girl and that kind of nonsense that don't really can't sell anything outside of Trinidad and probably in a couple of the islands. You know, but you know, they put that out there, and the radio perpetuated. They play that. I hardly hear my music on the radio today, and I mean in Trinidad, I'm in the other islands, and the other party would explain. But in my home, if I turn on the radio, I'm surprised when I hear one of my songs, and the song is getting, you know, they're getting recognition outside. You know, if you go up on my website and see the type of numbers it is doing. But at home here, you know, we feed in, and I had to explain to the guy that you're playing for virgin ears, young people who, if you just dumb them down with only listening to that, that's what they believe the world out there is accepting.
Yeah.
So they're following and going on that left road. You know, they have 40-something stations. Long ago, these had three stations.
Right.
Three stations. And I was able to be able to come out a musician that I am today, because I was able to hear Latin music, Brazilian music, jazz, country, all kind of music, because they were feeding the public with good listening material.
Gentlemen,
yeah, so standard has definitely dropped and changed.
But that's
go ahead.
That's where we're gonna have to leave it. The discussion has only just begun, because this element of the content is as integral to success as anything else. If you don't if you don't have the content, you can have the best business model. You will not be successful. These are all parts that work together. And probably the topic for another discussion that we definitely need to have as we pick up on this thing called our culture, our music, and its viability for the international community. This is where we're going to have to drop the curtains on this interview. I thank you gentlemen for being with us. It's been very insightful. And sometimes when you raise these discussions, people think that you're against, you know, you ain't like this one, you want to see you don't want to see nobody. But that's not, if you do not correct someone when you see that you feel they're going wrong, that's the worst thing you could possibly do, to leave them on their own. And as I said,
Before you go, I would say this, right? If I had a wish, I wish that if the government could put everybody on a plane and send them somewhere else in the world for 2 weeks and come back, you'll one, appreciate your country and the opportunities we have here differently, and your mindset will be changed. Because when you think all, you know, what you think is the ghetto living, or some men will actually to use such a term for the Jamaican music, when you go and you see what it comes from, what inspires that, your approach to it changes.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, right now we are all in our little bubbles. And not understanding that the world is much bigger than our bubble.
Yeah, definitely. This is what we're going to have to do. Gentlemen, thank you all once more for being with us this month. It's been very, very interesting. And I'm sure that we're going to have more discussions moving forward. That's for sure. Thank you once again.
Thank you very much.
Talk is streaming at freedom106.5.com.